Hey guys, thanks for listening to another episode of the Dirty Giants podcast. Before we start this week, I have an announcement to make. We're doing a 2025 Dirty Giants Big Shed contest. So kind of what that entails, you have to be wearing a piece of Dirty Giants gear. So we have the hats up on our website right now. Hopefully we'll have some shirts there soon as well. And there's going to be two categories, so biggest single and biggest set. The set, we're going to give a 20-inch inside spread credit to all of them just to kind of make it fair across the board. And to be entered in this, you have to be wearing a piece of Dirty Giants gear, so a hat or eventually a shirt. And those hats, like I said, are on our website right now. We're just going to do mule deer sheds only this year. You have to have picked up the shed or set this year, so the 2025 shed season. And that's kind of the biggest hang-up I've had with the shed contest, trying to figure out how to validate that. But I think through social media and stuff, we'll put the pictures of the biggest ones up for a while and just kind of vent it through social media, make sure that those sheds were in fact picked up this season. And then the top sheds, we're actually going to try to find a way to personally measure the sheds just to make it uniform and make sure the person with the biggest shed actually does win. And all those photos must be submitted by May 31st to be entered. And how you enter, you just find the shed, take a picture with your Dirty Giants hat on, and then you're going to send the picture to the email dirtygiantssheds@gmail.com. So the biggest set is going to get a free shoulder mount. The cape and everything is included from Strip Taxidermy. He's done all my deer mounts and he does an incredible job. It's crazy. They look so real. I love looking up at them and it just looks like how they looked right before I killed them. And then we're also going to get a free mini muley of the set, so I appreciate them doing that. That's a pretty cool thing. And then $250 to Art of the Hunt. You've heard me talk about them on the podcast before. They do some really, really cool stuff, kind of make a design of your buck, or in this case your sheds, and you can put it on a hat, shirt, phone case. They have all sorts of stuff. And then the biggest single is going to get the free mini muley of the shed, the $250 to Art of the Hunt as well. But then Antler Tech is going to do a clone of the shed. So what Antler Tech does is they mirror your actual shed and then make a replica. So it's like you have a set of the single shed that you have. It's super cool what they do. I don't know how they do it, but I'll post some videos up of some of the sheds they've done. It's pretty amazing. And then the random winner is going to get $100 to Art of the Hunt and then a free mini muley of their shed as well. So pretty cool stuff. I hope that gets you guys excited for the contest. I'm excited to see what's picked up, and I really do appreciate any of the support. If you guys can buy a hat or whatever, it helps me a lot. I put it all back into the podcast to get better sound, better gear, better stuff to try to make the podcast bigger and better. So I really appreciate it. I know that was kind of a long introduction, so let's go ahead and get into this podcast. All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Dirty Giants podcast. This is part two to the mini series of we just wanted to do a quick mini series to kind of help guys know what to do during the off season to prepare for their future hunt. They're just quick little episodes. We'll still do the long episodes with the stories, but thought we'd put these to kind of fill some time in between, give you guys something to listen to. So we have Hunter Larson of Rider Industries on again, and we thought it'd be a good idea to kind of talk about shed hunting and how it correlates to finding big bucks to hunt in the fall and just learning for your future hunt. So I appreciate you getting on again, Hunter. I think there's a lot to kind of go through and learn from this. So I appreciate you.
Yeah, for sure. Excited. This one, I used to do a lot of this. Not so much anymore with Ryder, but it's a fun one to talk about that no one really talks about.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the hard thing about shed hunting in particular is like when you pick up a set of sheds, I mean, that buck's still alive. So you kind of almost have to be secretive about it. But yeah, so there's not, I don't think there's a ton of info on it. And but I do think shed hunting is getting more popular. And I think there's more use to it besides just having a big set of sheds that you picked up. I think you can learn a lot about animals, what's out there, what's still alive.
Yeah, for sure. That's what I used to do. I just used to go pick them up without even thinking about, does this animal stay in this area? Does this buck or bull stay in this area year round, or does he live 100 miles away from here and he's just here to winter? But I've only got one example of this. A couple years ago, I was looking for a deer I knew that had survived, and I was in there looking for his horns, went through there a couple times throughout the spring, and I ended up finding an actually a bigger deer, a brown horn, that I didn't even know the deer existed. And kind of preparing for this, there's two different things that help you, I guess, prepare for the fall. One, I knew that deer was alive. Two, I didn't even know it existed. And three, while I'm out there shed hunting, I'm tracking deer, so it's really good because your conditions in the spring are always usually really good when they're dropping their horns. And so I use it to make sure deer are still alive and so get better at my tracking abilities, I guess.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. I mean, you're super good at tracking, and you've killed some really big bucks tracking them out. So, I try to do that too, shed hunting, because like you said, the conditions are usually pretty good. I'm not at your level, but it's a good way to practice. And then, kind of like you said, like just knowing that those deer are alive, like. I wasn't necessarily shed hunting, but a couple years ago, there's a big, like a really big deer I was hunting, but he's super popular and everyone knew where he summered. But the people I talked to and stuff and myself, I couldn't figure out where this deer wintered at all. And he was pretty high in elevation. So I'm out there trying to track him. It was like a month, well, maybe 2 weeks before the archery season started, and I'm on his track, and I walk right into his shed from last year, and I couldn't believe that he wintered there. So he must live his whole life there, and it just kind of gave me a piece to the puzzle, that deer is like a resident deer, that he lives there year round. I did kill that deer, but I was able to hunt him like on other seasons too, besides just the archery, because of that information. And I mean, he's probably still alive, but I haven't been able to catch up to him. But just finding those sheds gave me that piece to the puzzle. Like, okay, this deer is a resident buck here. He doesn't migrate like a lot of the other deer do.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, too, just like in all these states that have high country, there's always big bucks on the winter range. And it's big bucks that people didn't even know about. But if you can, by shed hunting and going out this time of year, around Christmas time, Thanksgiving for the rut and stuff, you can see it's really easy. Most of the time you can stay on the pavement and get out of your truck and see big groups of deer and see what's survived And then they'll start to migrate up the hill a little bit, depending on where they're at. And if you find their horns and you kind of know what's in the winter range, and if you see them in the summer, you know where they're at in November, December, you know where they're at in June, July, August. All you got to do is pretty much make a line between those two points. And during those muzzleloader seasons and early rifle seasons, you have somewhere to start hunting. If you can connect those two points, gives you a pretty good idea of somewhere they're going to be somewhere in that migration to be able to hunt them.
Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. I haven't thought a lot about that, to be honest, but just like you said, putting together pieces of the puzzle, and then you could probably figure out almost exactly their migration route, especially like on some of the units we hunt here where there's probably five or six different paths that the majority of the deer take. So you can kind of be like, okay, he's this mountain range deer and this mountain range deer. He's taking this migratory path. So that makes a lot of sense. And then another thing too that I think it helps out a lot with, especially like if you're guiding or looking for a specific like caliber of deer, is like measurement. Cause I mean, they'll usually grow, but like you can get a good idea of, okay, his G2 was this year and it's about the same, or it's a little bigger, and you can be a lot more confident with your scores.
Yeah, that's for sure. I just wish that, I'm not that lucky. I can't find, for some reason, I can't find big deer that I know about horns, but.
Yeah, it's hard to do, especially, I feel like it's so popular now that you have a lot of competition. But even if you're not finding like particular deer, I think it, like putting my hands on sheds has helped me, judge deer on the hoof a little bit. You're like, okay, like a big G2 is 18 plus, and that this is what that looks like and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's just over, you know, the way I measure stuff and, like bracket stuff is, if I do like the hang loose sign with my hand, the tip of my pinky to the tip of my thumb, spread all the way open, is 8.5 inches. So by measuring a horn or a G2, like you're saying, you look at the buck and you can look at your hand when you're sitting there looking at him through the glass, and you can, if you take a tape measure and measure from your pinky to your thumb with the hang loose sign, then you can kind of bracket them that way. But
yeah,
by picking up those sheds, you can actually put your hand on the sheds and be like, yep, that's what that is. And it definitely helps. But have you ever had the problem when you glass up a shed, you think it's the world's biggest shed and it's a piece of crap when you get over to it?
Yeah, especially when you glass them up from a long ways away, and you think you just found the next giant, and then you walk over and you're like, I don't even want to keep this shed.
Yeah, that's funny. My biggest shed ever, I glassed it up, and I wasn't even going to go over and get it. It's not like it was hard to get to. It was just didn't look big. And I pulled it out of the ground. There's cheaters and eye guards and all sorts of stuff coming off of it.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
I usually have the opposite problem. I get all excited and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the biggest shed I've ever found. And I pull it out of the bush. I'm like, ah, no. It's not nearly as big as I thought.
Yeah, and elk horns, they're the worst. They can get a little rag five that looks huge.
Yeah, I've done that a bunch of times where I think I find a solid elk horn and it's just a rag.
Yeah. But. Like, another thing is like with the with the shed hunting. If you're not, even if I know that's what you're out there doing, but if you're not shed hunting, you're at least learning roads. If you start early enough, you'll see the animals that are there. And as you're running roads, I don't ever not have my head hanging out the window. It's really hard for me to just go out and look for a track to track out a deer. But if I'm like going out shed hunting, I might as well be looking for tracks. And if I cut a big track while I'm shed hunting or on my way to shed hunting, I'll get on the track to go see if the buck has big horns on its head or if it's shed or stuff like that. So you can practice your tracking skills as well through shed hunting.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I was actually going to ask you, so let's say like you're shed hunting for a particular buck that you know has been in the area or you've seen a big track, like how do you go about that? Like are you gridding or are you kind of like trying to follow tracks or are you kind of just walking in areas you think he spends most of his time in, or what's kind of your tactic on that?
Well, I don't know, because I, like I said, haven't successfully found one of the, like I found big horns off a deer I knew about, but like there's been a few deer on the strip over the last 4 or 5 years, those 230 type deer. And the only one of those deer that I found a horn off of is the one I glassed up, not even during shed hunting. But when I'm in an area, what I try to do, I have found other horns off other bucks, but you want, like, all that the deer care about this time of year is just feed. So wherever the best feed is, and you'll notice there'll be a lot of deer tracks over and over and over in the same area. And then you'll go a mile down the road and there won't be a single deer track. It's because they're concentrated around the feed. So if you're in an area that doesn't have deer tracks that are like circling around, then you kind of need to look for a different area. Generally, when I find the most horns is when you're right on the edge of a tree line or like a brush line that has good feed and the tracks are circling. That means those deer aren't moving more than a couple hundred yards, and the deer will either lose their sheds when they're stand up out of their bed or when they're feeding. If you can find those two areas that are really close together, that's where I generally find the most horns, is where their bedding's really close to their feeding area.
That makes sense. Because I always struggle with that. Like, I don't know if I should be walking around in the, like, in the junipers or out in the open flats where they're feeding or I can never decide. And then I could never decide if I'm a gridder, if I want to start just gridding it and cover every square inch, or if I want to do circles, or if I'm trying to follow tracks. Like, I kind of play mind games with myself. I can never just, like, decide. Like, if I find one side, then I'll start doing circles or grid. But anytime I start gridding, I start kind of veering off. I'm like, oh, I got to go check over there. And
it's a pattern. It's a mental game for sure. Like, I won't grid unless I find something that's worth gridding for. But
But I think too, kind of like what you were saying before we got onto this, like even if you're not picking up sheds, like there's a lot to learn, like you said, roads, but I've also like found kind of like hidden bedding areas that, like, unless you are down on their level, you probably wouldn't really even know was there. Like I've glassed an area for like probably 20 different times, and then I go down in there to look, like during shed season, I'm like, I didn't even know this like kind of secondary ridge was down in these cedars that have probably been in there. Or, like, you can even find, like, if you're hunting in the desert, like, water. Like, I've found little seeps where I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is probably where he's been watering all year, and I had no idea this was there.
Yeah, no, that's very smart. I didn't even think about that until you said it, but, like, on the strip, there's roads everywhere out on that place. Like, you look at a map, and it's just gridded with roads. But I've learned so many different roads and so many ways around points and just becoming familiar with the area.
Mm-hmm.
Through shed hunting. Like, when I'm out there shed hunting, I'm marking coyote stands to make stands for coyotes in the late fall, and I'm putting glassing knobs on my map while I'm out there shed hunting. Like, there's no pressure.
Yeah.
When you're doing it, so.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I think that's one of the best ways to learn country, I think, is just being there. I mean, you can do so much on Google Earth and these different mapping apps, but actually, like, putting boots on the ground and shed hunting and walking around, I think, make a huge difference. And it's something you can kind of do now to improve your odds and help you know and figure out stuff for the fall hunt.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey guys, thanks again for listening. I really appreciate the support with this and everything else. If you guys could leave a review on whatever platform you listen to your podcast on, that would help a lot. And then if you have any feedback on these shorter episodes, I'd love to hear it. Kind of just know what you guys think, if they're worth putting out, so we can get more content out there, or if you guys only really want to listen to the longer ones with the stories. But anyways, either way, let me know. I appreciate it. We'll have another one soon.